Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This week, I have a guest on, Jake Jorgovin. Jake, how's it going?
Doing pretty well. How about yourself, Craig?
Doing good. Thanks. So Jake and I have been chatting in the kind of productized service world for several years now. And excited to have you on the show to kind of talk productized services, talk about sales a little bit, and talk about maybe almost selling the business. So maybe we'll leave that one for last. But Jake, for folks like who don't know you and kind of what you're up to, you want to give a bit of an intro to kind of you and what you're up to?
Yeah. So basically, my name is Jake Jorgovin, and I have two primary businesses. First one is Lead Cookie. We're a done-for-you LinkedIn lead generation service, and we're actually doing full. I need to get better at my one-liner pitch here because we now actually are doing full outreach across email and phone as well. So basically, a full kind of lead gen agency there. And then my second business is Content Allies, where we turn consultants into thought leaders through content marketing. So that's kind of another business there. And then I do a lot of publishing on my personal brand, my website. I've got my own podcast, blog every week, and stuff like that as well. So that's a bit about me.
So this is a really interesting thing I'd love to talk about. Is you publish all of your, I'll say, business-related content on your personal blog, right? Does Lead Cookie have a blog itself, or does it all go on your blog?
Lead Cookie does have one, but it is we had a content push for about a quarter where we dove into it, and we did create a bunch of content. It was more video. We actually, Lead Cookie's probably got a larger YouTube following just because we've done a lot of LinkedIn tutorials.
Okay.
But majority of the writing has gone out on my own personal brand. And we've only just put out a little bit on the Lead Cookie. We're actually ramping up our Lead Cookie podcast this upcoming quarter, but we have not done too much blogging or written content with Lead Cookie. It's mostly gone through my personal brand.
Gotcha. And that's fared well, I guess. I mean, I know Lead Cookie is a big successful business, so I guess that worked out okay.
Yeah, it's been interesting, and I've talked or written on this, but it's like at one point I found that like my personal brand is driving about 68% of Lead Cookie's revenue. So in some capacity, my articles, my podcasts, the relationships and networks that I make through kind of having my personal brand out there is driving pretty large majority of the revenue. And so that was just this interesting thing that I discovered because I had been building my personal brand for 7 or 8 years. And Lead Cookie is only about 2.5 years old. So it was this interesting thing that I found, I guess, when I launched Lead Cookie is like I had been building this personal brand with really, you know, I was pointing it toward my own like freelance consulting and everything before then. And then I started the business and was like, oh, cool. I guess I'll just point all of that toward Lead Cookie. And that worked really well. And then it's kind of worked okay with Content Allies. There's some overlap. A lot of my audience is not as ideal of a fit, but we still have had some great customers for Content Allies even come from my audience as well. But it's just been this interesting thing where I just always look at like your personal brand is an investment you can't really go wrong with because it just kind of follows you, you know, wherever you go, and you can just point it at the different offers you have in your entrepreneurial career at that time.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think Dave and I look at this podcast as it's about the only content I create on a regular basis. I'm not really active on social media. I don't blog on my personal site that much, but this is our 205th episode, I think. And so like we put out a fair amount of content here, and yeah, you go to conferences and people know you, and you know, you get introduced to folks, you know, like yourself. And I think a lot of people know us from the podcast. And yeah, I think it's great. And it keeps it flexible to where, yeah, you start something new, say, hey, I'm up to this new thing. And you have a whole bunch of people that, you know, kind of know and trust and like you, hopefully, that go check out that new thing. So I agree, it's good investment. I'd love to talk just kind of generally about productized services. Can you give folks an idea of kind of how big Lead Cookie is? I'm sorry, how big Lead Cookie is, just from a team perspective, or I don't know if you share revenue or anything like that, like just an idea of the size of the business?
Yeah, that's fine. And I get a good laugh out of that because I'm friends with Damien over at LeadFuse. So yeah. Good guy. Yeah, so Lead Cookie, we're roughly around, I'd say, we're ranging between about 22 to 25 people on the team. Some are kind of flex team members.
Okay.
On the kind of higher end of that. So a large portion of that is kind of based in the Philippines. And then we've got kind of all of our account management and our like account strategists are all US or Canadian based. So that's kind of the team that we have in place because we do everything by hand. There's a lot of these lead gen companies that just software automate everything, which is against LinkedIn's terms of service and can get you into some bad trouble and tends to lead to a poor quality service. So we do everything for hand and really aim to be the high kind of quality provider in the space. So it's kind of what we look like on the team side of things. Did you have more questions? Was there more components to that question?
No, that's cool. I mean, I think that's a good, you know, there's a lot of ways to talk about the size of a business. And I think that's a really good one. I mean, 20, 25 people is a lot. You know, us at Podcast Motor, let's say we're probably up to 20-ish now. It's in similar kind of thing. Like we have, you know, we talk about like the, you know, the management and customer facing stuff. And then we have the fulfillment end kind of on our side, which sounds like the same kind of breakdown that you have. And we're something like 75% fulfillment, you know, if we broke the team down, and then 25% sales and admin and project management and stuff like that. Is that kind of similar to what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably pretty,
number
pretty similar
of people, right?
Side. Oh yeah, definitely in terms of number of people. I'd say the interesting thing is that the cost wise, it's a close split just because, again, like all the sales and the strategy, like those are the most expensive team members that are all kind of North American based. So it's always interesting from the cost breakdown where, but yeah, it's definitely from the team member size, probably about the same.
Yeah. We've just recently started having pretty good success with sales at Podcast Motor, and would love to talk about kind of how you guys run your sales process, because for years it's been like just inbound sales, just me getting on the phone with anybody who wants to talk and all this kind of crap. And now we have a person who's dedicated to it. It's the only thing he thinks about every day, and it's totally transformed the business. I mean, like I don't really share our numbers really, but suffice it to say, this person is well worth what we've invested in them, and they're loving it too because they're making a ton of money. Talk about like how you guys do sales at Lead Cookie.
Yeah. So basically at the point whenever I was like ready to hand off sales, I basically was kind of looking around and like there's an interesting thing with, I think this is the case for a lot of productized services, but it was definitely the case for like Lead Cookie is that, you know, we get so many leads that we can't help. Like if someone comes to us and like is like, hey, I run a software development company and we work with enterprise and startups, or like we do SEO and PPC marketing for small businesses, like we can't do lead gen for that because like that's just a horrible value proposition and like there's no niche, there's just nothing unique about it. And like we get tons and tons of these bad leads in. And so we're not badly, not all bad, but like just like we're not going to be able to run a successful campaign. So the interesting thing for us is like our sales is more or less like the first line of consultations, I guess. And so really what I ended up doing whenever I hired sales is I found these two guys, Isaac Marsh and Jeff Doler, who were doing basically, they had their own kind of cold email and outreach agency, and they were, you know, running 5 clients at a time and just the two of them. And they had this, you know, good little business, but they were not loving the entrepreneurial side. They were loving like the implementing and the craft of doing the work, but the whole like, oh God, I have to like think about running a business and growing a business and like all these like aspects, like they weren't loving that.
Yeah.
So I ended up bringing them both on board, and basically Isaac became my head of sales. And almost what we say is like one of the first, like real kind of like the strategist, like the lead strategist there, where he's like the first person having that conversation, validating the campaign. And then Jeff Doler came on board as the second strategist to kind of create redundancy within the company, because we previously only had one other strategist in the company. So it was an interesting thing, I guess, like the angle that I took was basically hiring a consultant in the field into the sales role, which Isaac would have never called, like we never would have called himself a salesperson. I actually recently interviewed him on my podcast just so we could like talk about this, but he's like, I don't think he ever like thought he would end up in sales. And they had Jeff, the other team member who joined, they had him running sales before, and he's like not very good at it. So it was this interesting thing where like brought them in and it worked out really well. But that angle of hiring a consultant, I think, is a unique one. I think that can work well for productized services.
At what point did you bring them on? Like, did they both come on full time?
Yeah. So we started, it was probably about a 3-month ramp to getting them full time.
Okay.
What we did is, and this was the beginning of 2019. So they came on in January of 2019. And what we did is we actually had them work in all of the other roles of the company first, partially just because it was like, oh, well, like that's going to actually, then we're like, you know, monetizing them right away, even if it's not at a great rate. Like they're getting experience in every single role. They're doing the work. They're seeing what it's like to operate. And then over the course of 3 months, slowly ramped them into the strategist roles. And then Isaac into the sales role. Took probably about 3 to 4 months in total to get that entire handoff complete.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think we've seen something similar four months, I would say. And we were not as smart about transferring like this subject matter expertise from my head to Chris's head. Chris is our sales guy, Chris Post. I think that that's a complicated thing to do in any sales role. I mean, I used to sell like enterprise level medical equipment. And I mean, we were engineers. I literally have a biomedical engineering degree. And so I would have to go in and talk to the doctors about the engineering stuff and to the procurement people about buying and to the administrators and CFO about the finance stuff. And like, there's just a shit ton of knowledge that you have to be able to talk to. And I think this is to a lesser degree, but even, you know, for us, it's like people come in and talk about podcasting and this and that and the other and RSS feeds and hosting and strategy and all this kind of stuff. And I think for people to expect a salesperson to come in on the first day and hit the ground running is crazy. And unfortunately, I think this is the thing that keeps people from hiring salespeople, because like if you were guaranteed, like on, for you and I, like on the fulfillment level, you're guaranteed that when you bring someone in to run like your LinkedIn outreach stuff, they're going to add this value that you can charge for. And for us, the same thing. We bring in an audio editor. We're charging $75 an episode for them to edit this audio. I pay them some percentage of that. We keep the rest. It's, you know, all upside for us. But like for the first 4 months, a salesperson is a sunk cost. Well, for us, at least to you, at least they added mm-hmm. some value. So I really like that. And I think the facilitating the transfer of knowledge is great, because that's the hugest barrier that we found.
Yeah. And I can share kind of just some of, I guess, the ways, I guess, that we handled that transition is, I guess, first thing is like, I think one of the big mistakes, and I've like written on this, is like, because I failed actually the first time I tried to hand off sales, like it went horrible. Our sales dropped and I had to lay off 6 people. So like that happened like, wow, 2 years ago and was awful feeling. And one of the worst business experiences of my life. So like I was like pretty burned by that. And so I really wanted to get it right the second time. And so what I like really got down to was like to just build and refine and just like get that sales process to the point where it was just clockwork and repetitive. And like I had it dialed in, I had the scripts, I had the frameworks, I had the whole flow optimized. So there was just like literally I was just showing up to fill a role is kind of where it was. And so I aimed to get it to there before I ever started handing it over. And then I documented like everything I possibly could in this huge outline, this huge sales playbook, like FAQs. I just like went overboard trying to get everything documented so that when I started training Isaac on there, he was like, you know, had all this to go on. He was just able to jump into this system. And then basically we did kind of, you know, him shadowing me for about a month. I shadowed him for about a month and then started kind of letting him go off on some of his own and stuff. But that shadowing him was also super helpful just to be there on those, you know, curveball questions, all the things like that. But that was kind of like the flow and the process of actually of handing that off. And it worked out really well in that sense. So he's been running it, and he's actually now optimized it. It took him some time to get comfortable, but he restructured our pricing, and it's like a complete improvement,
yeah,
in all aspects. And that, but you know, and it just took him a little time to get to that point of, I guess, being comfortable and realizing the system I built, you know, still had room to be improved upon.
Yeah. I love it. So we did. I'll add one thing to that we did. It's funny. I don't do a lot of things right, but this was right. As I recorded when I knew we were going to hire a salesperson. Like I get it in my head. Like we're going to hire someone else here in the next couple of months. And I've already got it in my head and it's kind of ruminating and festering. And I know, you know, getting an idea of what this person's going to look like and what their role is going to be. So I knew middle of last year, in spring, maybe of last year, we're going to hire a salesperson. Chris eventually came on in like September. So like in that time, I recorded all of my sales calls. Mm-hmm. And so when Chris awesome. Came on, he had like 20 or 30 sales calls to listen to. And so this was just like, and you know, I mean, anybody who is a consultant or runs a product or service, 90% of a sales call is exactly the same. And so like he was able to hear those same questions and the responses I give, which are exactly the same over and over and over. And that cut our working time, like live real time work together to where he shadowed me for about 2 weeks. I shadowed him back. Like you're saying, I was just on the call with him for about a week. And then he went. And I think, you know, he wasn't super successful in his first month. And he sold stuff to people that he shouldn't have sold to. They're just like bad fit, bad value customers, like you're talking about before. But man, since then, like, yeah, same thing. He's like refined some of the things we're offering and definitely has a process. I wish we were better at documenting process just because it's not my thing. You know, like I'm just not a type A organized person. And so like, I have to do it to enable him to be successful and for like our project managers to be successful. It's like, I have to give them the tools they need so they can go be successful and not be nagging me all the time. And everybody's so much happier. I just have to get that through my thick head. But on that point, I'd love to hear kind of a little bit of like how you guys work, like tools and how do you document stuff and how do you keep it updated and actually like work from it? You know, I'd love to hear a bit about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I have one question on your point real quick before I dive into that. Do you ever have customers push back on you recording sales calls or finding that awkward?
No.
At all?
Never.
Like, nope. No? Okay.
No. And I just told him, I said, right, hey, we're in the process of hiring a salesperson. I'd like to record our calls so that, you know, we can use it for training purposes. Is that okay? And I don't remember anybody saying no. Yeah.
All right. That is good to know. I will, I need to start doing that then because I'm hiring content allies person soon. So that'll be... Yeah. You've just given me some tip. Look at that. I'm getting some value out of this. So awesome. Yeah, your question was, I guess, then on how we work at LeadCookie and just kind of how we operate and everything.
Yeah, just kind of, you know, tech stack and how you document and then like how you document and then work from the document. Cause that's the big thing. We have a lot of documents to just sit around and collect dust.
Yeah. So basically what we do is we use Airtable for a lot of stuff. That's kind of how we just organize all of our customers and keep like everything organized there. And that's even how we actually organize all of our outreach campaigns is through Airtable. But basically, like when a customer comes on, they onboard with an account strategist. And that account strategist kind of learns their business, understands the strategy, what's, you know, the goal, who they're trying to target, the kind of messaging and everything. And they create a Google Doc, which includes essentially the targeting of who we're going to reach out to and like the campaign plan, as well as all of the scripts. And from there, we have basically a kind of like our US team of like managers, they oversee. And then what we do to just like keep quality control really high, because, you know, we have team members in the Philippines who are sending messages on behalf of our customers. What we found works really well is we have our US team take kind of the document that the strategists build. And then they copy the scripts over and they copy the targeting and they basically drop that into these systems we've built that the Philippines teams can work from, to where it's almost error proof unless a US team makes a mistake, because the Philippine team is basically like where they work, they're getting access. Like we're giving them the access of saying, hey, here's your search queue, here's your messages, this is what you need to do and send.
Mm-hmm.
And so we build these like kind of custom process documents for each role
that include
those search pieces. We use Airtable to organize it and link it. But yeah, we use Airtable as kind of our core organization of almost everything, like Airtable and Google Docs, two things. And actually we use Trello a little bit. And I tried to graduate us out of this and like, or minimize tools, but my ops team was just like already loving Trello a bit. So they use Trello a little bit too. So there's a number of tools, but they all work together in this like flow that is just rocking and working really well in that sense. So, but our goal is basically to try to just have the US team do all of like the where like pointing the direction of what needs to be done. And then the Philippines team kind of comes and operates that, runs the processes, gives the updates, stuff like that as well.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And like communication with the clients, I guess that's like the US team that manages that. And you guys run it through like Help Scout or something like that, or?
So we actually looked at Help Scout and we just never saw the value of going toward that. So we basically, the way we structure it is like, we still just have team members emailing directly. And we actually do have our Philippines team email directly with customers. That was actually like a big mental barrier I had for a while of like, oh man, if like they're getting emails from someone in the Philippines, like they're going to be triggered by that. But like, no one really is. Their account strategy is all in the US. They have two points of contact, an account strategist, and then they have their account manager, and their account manager is in the Philippines. And it has not been an issue at all to have those offshore team members emailing the daily updates on a regular basis. They're never hopping on calls with them. Mm-hmm. They're never discussing strategy. If they get anything like that, they just kind of loop in the account strategist. But yeah, we just have those kind of two points of email that are CC'd on everything, and it's been working quite well.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah, we use Help Scout for just kind of keeping everything in one place. And we ask our customers, please just send everything to this email address. All of us are in there all the time. We'll figure out who needs to kind of take care of your message. And that's been fine. I think, one of the things we try very hard across both businesses to avoid is siloing. So direct messages mm-hmm. in Slack, emails one-on-one that's not in an inbox that everybody can get access to, all this kind of stuff. And so for that reason, we try really hard, all messages go to hello@podcastmotor.com and we'll figure it out from there. The thing that from a workflow perspective, I feel like we don't quite have worked out is when we're onboarding a new customer and starting a new show for them. Because for us, starting taking it over existing podcasts, you say you came to us and say, hey, can you guys start editing my podcast? Yep, no problem. It's literally no extra work for us. But we have service these extra services where it's hey, we're gonna help you launch your podcast. We're gonna create the image and submit it to iTunes and all this kind of stuff. We've gotten the first 90% of that really nailed down. And it's all run by a gal in the Philippines, actually, which is really great because she just totally gets it. And I feel like the last part that we don't quite have is a little bit what you're talking about, which is there's a consultative kind of thing that comes back right when we're about to launch the podcast. And this is the really value added part. And to hand that back, to me, seems weird. It seems like taking authority away from her. She's been running the whole thing, coordinating, submitting to iTunes, all this kind of stuff. And then for me to get back and say, okay, we're here. Here's all the stuff. Here's some strategy about how to launch just seems weird. And so I think talking about, this mental barrier, I have something I need to get over there or we need to do it a different way because something doesn't seem quite right. And I feel like we're not quite delivering the badass value that I feel like we should be in some way there. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I can see that. I'll say there's no right or wrong kind of on that stuff, but it's just maybe an experiment of trying to, I've even tried at times to just be all right, I'm going to try to let this person own it. And then you're it didn't work. And so, or it's maybe just how can the process kind of flow a little different or something. But it's interesting though, those are the challenges that sometimes you just got to kind of step back and rethink everything through a bit from the get-go. I'm trying to do a lot in the customer success, and this has helped a lot just many times to try to think through that whole customer onboarding experience over and over. There's just every time you come back around and do that, I feel like there's always something that last 10% that can end up making a huge difference there. So
yeah. Oh man, you'll get a crack out of this. So when this gal came on with us, the same time our sales guy came on, because he was starting to sell these packages that are really intense. And I was doing all the work before, which is why I hated it. Because it was just I don't have the mental space to do all this work. And so I said, okay, I'm going to create a document that lays out everything that we do here. And you take it and run with it. Everything that you think sucks, put in this document and I'll do the same thing. And so we put this stuff in this document and I just looked at it over the weekend. It was 2.5 pages long. And in 3 months, it's down to 3 lines that we still have to implement. And I'm like, this is great. Just writing it down. I hadn't looked in the document in 2 weeks, but I think just looking at writing it down, looking at it once or twice, I kept it open for a couple of weeks. It's there. And it's it's festering in your mind, okay, we have a new customer coming into the process. We have to nail this part of it now. You nail that part of it. And that's, one thing off the list. And I'm patting myself on the back virtually here because it's great when you can do that stuff. And you don't have to think about it again. It's the process. She runs the process. Customers are happier. It's cool. But what I look at when we don't do that and customers are not happy and we have good team members in place, I look at me and say, you suck or your process sucks because they're good people, right? And our customers are reasonable. It has to be you and the process you put together, you're saying, that kept them from being successful, kept our team members from being successful.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. And that's the interesting thing because it's and it's a helpful thing because and especially if you can get a process rocking while you still own it, That's again, like the thing, like when handing off sales, it's like, I knew that the sales process worked and I just needed someone to deliver it. And that helps you know that, you know, if the process is failing or if the person is failing. That first time I handed over sales, it wasn't because that guy wasn't good. Actually, he's still one of our account strategists who I had run at that time. He's Rick on our team, is awesome, and he's one of our account strategists. But first of all, I probably shouldn't have put him in the sales role. And second of all, I just did not set him up for success. And so it's the interesting thing about just like iterating, refining those processes. It's like, you can, I feel like those are like the mistakes I made a bunch early. And every once in a while, I still kind of do it again. I do a little less and I catch myself quicker. But like, you just hire, you try to put someone in a role and you just don't have it defined enough. I feel like is one of just the worst entrepreneurial mistakes. And then it's just horrible all around because they're failing, but it's like on you and it's not,
it's
a nice
all
thing.
Your fault. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. It's terrible. If you're comfortable, I'd love to talk about how you compensate your salespeople.
Yeah. So interesting thing is, so like where I got a lot of my sales model from, there's an interview I did with Dobbin Buck on my podcast, which is like called Working Without Pants. I did this with him and he runs Get You Wired, which is the, I think they're the number one Infusionsoft agency in the world. And so it was really interesting because I actually got a lot of stuff from that, like him. Like, first of all, they like structure their team in pods to like organize how they do their ops. And then they have like shared resources. And then one of the things that on that interview that he shared, which was just like so good, was he's like, I don't put my salespeople on commission because I ultimately like they're consultants and I don't want them incentivized to sell bad fit customers. And like, I really want our service to have integrity. So like, I want them to be incentivized by the overall growth of the company, but not tied in any way to any individual sale. So that way, like they're always making the decision that's going to be in the best of the company. Cause otherwise, you know, they can just sell a crappy 90-day launch package or something, get someone in the door, make a little bit of money. And then like, they're going to churn off and they made some money, but the business is, you know, in a worse spot for it. And so that was just really interesting to hear his perspective on that. So basically I have, for the first year, had Isaac basically just on a flat kind of just retainer salary with us. And that was kind of how we did the first year. And over time, as I really wanted to, I guess, align incentives and like figure out a way to make this improve that and also step away from the company, I actually started tying his compensation to a percentage of overall company revenue. So again, it's very much incentivized to assign people that are going to be best for the company long term and not try to, you know, just, you know, quick hits of cash or something. But that is kind of how I've structured it now. So it's not in any way tied to an individual sale. And so that's kind of how I've structured or adjusted it over the past year and where we've kind of landed on right now. And it's been a good shift, I guess, since making that, because I feel like it's just, I actually took him and I took another ops team member and kind of put them on that same model where they had that ability. And it's just, I think tying people's compensation like that gives them a whole lot of ownership and motivation to figure out, like, and just think in many ways on like how to grow the business versus that being all on your shoulder as the entrepreneur. So it's been a really interesting shift to see that, to where like, I don't feel like I'm the only one pushing things forward anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I talked about, I think on our last episode with Dave, is that bringing on a salesperson is the first time that someone else has been moving the business forward in 5 years, you know, like, and it's totally liberating because it's a whole part of, the business that I don't think about. You know, I don't think about it until he lands a client that we have to go do something for. And then I make sure that the process and the, you know, people are in place to do it. And that's cool. And I pay him once a month and I pay him a lot more every month than I did the month before. That's great. And, so we pay him, a flat percentage of the first month of revenue, which I think is probably the poorest way I could align it with the long-term value of clients. But it's the simplest, aside from a flat salary. And I talk about that, like the difference there a little bit. Like, I was a salesperson before and we had some crazy fucked up commission structures, schemes and clawbacks and all this kind of stuff. And I thought about that for a while. One of our mutual friends has kind of getting into the world of sales with one of his team members and is like incentivizing them on churn or like total client retention. And I like that a lot because I think that kind of gets at like the revenue model that you're talking about. But for me, that's just super complicated. And like, you got to track it and you got to track every customer. And then like, you know, the salesperson could have like negative commission 1 month and that would really be shitty. And like, so I don't know. So we pay a flat amount of first month sales. Being a recurring subscription thing, then that's cool. So we, you know, we lose a lot of our profit margin in that first month, but then the rest of the months are, you know, great. Yeah. So, and I think the continuum or like the decision there, like that everybody has to make is like the type of person you get in to do sales when you're more of a consultative role, like you're talking about, or this Infusionsoft is actually the kind of person I had in mind when I put the job posting out of like inside sales role. I want this person to be like a podcast consultant, basically to go sell and then be like a super helpful person to our customers. And that's cool. And that's not who we hired just by happenstance. And this person is like a total bulldog in the sales arena. And so he's selling stuff and wanting to create new products that we can totally do. It's not that hard. And the cool thing about it, I think, is when you find the person that wants to work for commission, for a larger percent of their compensation to be commission, then you find somebody who is going to go out and really push things forward. And so for us, like we're a smaller company and we're probably don't have the processes and stuff like that. So he's just got to go figure all this stuff out to a bigger extent, probably than like you could hire a larger range of people and maybe pay them less to fill a sales role like you have that's more structured and they have more kind of resources around it. I don't know, that's how I look at it at least.
Yeah, it's always interesting hearing like the different ways people approach it. And I totally get where you're coming from on that, just like the simplicity of it. I did referral commissions. Actually, we still do them. At Lead Cookie is like 10% of revenue and it's a pain to track.
Yeah.
Whenever I did Continentalize, I was like, all right, I'm doing a flat fee because like tracking percentages is of like retention is, it's painful. I totally get that kind of thing. And just like, that's the thing is like, our companies are not big enough to have complex sales incentive systems. Like you don't want to have to maintain that. So just keep it simple is like, and you know, it may not be perfect, but it gets them there and it gets the motivation there close enough aligned. I think that's as good as you can make it.
Yeah. And the salespeople don't want to think that you're trying to screw them either. And that's what complicated sales commission structures are, is a way for the company to say, if I'm not getting exactly what I want, you're getting fucked. You know?
Yeah.
Nobody like, you know, whatever. Nobody likes that. Yeah. Interesting. I'd love to hear a bit about, you know, you had a near miss at selling Lead Cookie last year. I would love to hear a bit about that.
Yeah. So I kind of went through the process basically. I kind of just got turned on to the idea of like, oh, like you can sell your company. And, you know, I was working with a business advisor who very like, fortunately, he like got me and leveled up that mindset. And Alex McLafferty, who actually I think we both work with as well.
Yep.
And he kind of like taught a lot of the mindset of just like what makes a company acquirable. And it was useful. And I learned a ton. And I probably, in retrospect, I probably shouldn't have tried to sell. But anyway, I had the company, I had handed off sales and was like, this is awesome. Like all I do now is marketing, which is one other point I'll just quickly say is that just handing off sales doesn't mean anything. You still have to drive leads. That's been another important lesson. But basically I got out of the sales seat to the point where I really was able to not work much on Lead Cookie at all. And I still don't much to date here. And I was like, all right, I'm going to try to sell this. Like, why not? We're at a good spot. Like, it's an interesting thing. And I knew that they're like Lead Cookie. Like, we've got platform risk. Like, we're heavily built around LinkedIn. We're in the outbound area, which, you know, cold email's been heavily disrupted. LinkedIn could be disrupted. And so, like, there's just a lot of platform risk and volatility in our market. And I've always was kind of like hesitant to sell. For a long time, I was like, no one's going to ever buy this company. Like, it's such a volatile industry. And ultimately, that was pretty well correct. But like, I just decided to like go have a conversation and talk to some brokers as I was like getting stuff ready. And what I've learned in retrospect is that brokers will tell you anything to get you to sign with them because their commissions are insane on these deals. And even if you sign with them and they don't sell, like they like it's insane. Like for basically for making an introduction and like preparing a report, that broker is going to make like minimum like 30 grand to like upwards to like up to like 100K on like your deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like for like not a lot of work. So like what I learned, like they just like lie to you and will tell you like whatever the hell you want to hear. Is like honestly what it felt like. And like they're like, oh no, the platform risk, like don't worry about that. That's not going to be an issue. Like people will understand. Like it's not going to be huge. Like every person I talk to, so there's platform risk. This is kind of a concern. And then like I get an email later, oh, he's out, there's too much platform risk. And I'm like, these are all the things that
this
I said.
This is what I was telling you.
Yeah. And like they just like told me, they're like, no, we've got so many buyers, like it won't be an issue. So like that was just like this big thing where I just like realized these brokers, like I just felt like so misled by them. And ultimately, like I didn't spend any money with them. I spent a little bit in it, like advising and accounting fees to other people to get ready for the acquisition. But it wasn't a huge financial loss. But the biggest thing was like the massive distraction and like mental overhead of that whole process was horrible. to like think you're going to sell. Because like we actually got up to the point where we had a letter of intent. And we signed a letter of intent. We got into due diligence. And then it was like even more messed up because like the broker had been, they also used cash accounting to basically run our finances and then stop updating our finances right after we had a really good month where we just had like, it was just a happenstance month where like a bunch of people prepaid for like 3 months. We had one guy who prepaid for 6 months of service. So it just like looked like we were on this massive uphill trajectory. And then if you actually put that on accrual, like we're just kind of flat and normal, like normal steady growth. And like we go through this whole like back and forth, getting this letter of intent signed, and they go to due diligence and they open up the books and they're like, what the hell? Like you're not actually on this massive uphill trajectory that we've just like negotiated all these terms around. And like, and then the whole deal died within like 48 hours. And so it was just like this awfully annoying and frustrating experience that I learned a ton through. Like I learned so much that like whenever the day comes when I do want to sell my businesses in the future, like I am so ready to like, and I know what to expect now, but it was just a wild experience, and just I'm grateful and I learned a ton through it, but that's just kind of some of the experience of what happened there.
Yeah. And now kind of after the fact, how do you kind of feel about the business and your kind of position in it and everything?
Honestly, it feels great. Like, it's like, it's just like, it was like roughly about like 6 to 7 months of like, I don't know if I'm going to own this business next year. And it's really hard to like think long-term when you're like, okay, long-term A, I have the business, long-term B, I don't. Like,
right.
It's binary, like really hard to just like have a clarity on your future when like there's two divergent paths. And so literally the day like it didn't go through, I was just like, breath of fresh air. I was like, cool, I'm not even pissed. Like, all right, onward. And it just felt great. And like, I'm at this point now where I'm just like, I'm excited, I'm reinvigorated. I'm just like doing like marketing stuff. And I'm just like, oh, this is so cool. Cause like now I'm just like gonna do marketing things all day, which is what I love to do. Like my unique ability is I love to create things. So I'm just like, I'm just gonna create marketing things that drive leads all day. And like that's what I'm going to put my time toward the business toward, which is what drives me and gives me energy. And then I just know that doing all these fun things, creating content, you know, appearing on podcasts, the things that I enjoy, these are going to somehow lead to like my increasing my bottom line and stuff. So it's like really cool because I just get to do the things that are fun to me now because I did, I guess, over that year, build the business where it doesn't need me for really anything other than marketing and lead driving, essentially.
Yeah. It's funny. I was similarly close to selling a business last year. And yeah, it makes you really appreciate what you have after the fact because you're like, this is the best business. I don't have to do anything. And it makes whatever decent money. Like the opposite, I think, is you sell the business and then you have a bunch of money and you're just going to sit there and say like, well, what do I do now? You're just going to go do it again. Right. So like, that's how I feel about it. It's like, I've always, I've talked about it very openly on the show here. I've always wanted to sell a business and just make a bunch of money. But I think what I realize now is like, unless and until I can sell for the amount to where I can never have to get on the computer again and can just like buy a sailboat and go around the world, I'm going to keep doing this because this is fun. It's the best way to earn a living and like create value and stuff. And if I sold a business for $500,000 or $2 million or whatever, I can't retire. So I'd have to go do it again, which is a hell of a lot harder than just keeping doing it for the next few years and getting the value out of the business and the dividends and the earnings that I can make in that time. So yeah, I think selling on the low end is really overrated, I think. Up to $5 million that you can bring home. If I could bring home $5 million, that's a different story. But up until then, I don't know. If you like what you're doing, I guess the caveat.
I guess that's true. There's like there's a startup 50K exit. I'm gonna find the name of this podcast because this is like a really interesting one. Well, I can't remember the exact name. It was like Startup Chat or Startup Stories or some show, but it was like how 250K exit is life changing. And I think like the interesting thing that like to look at is like, I guess to like counter that point a bit is like, I guess from my perspective was like part of the, one of the reasons I wanted to sell it is just because like the volatility of the lead gen industry and just being totally. This is like not an industry I want to keep building in. And like one of the things they just like brought up on that show is just like, and like for, if you're like a young first time entrepreneur and like, you know, you don't have a ton of cash in the bank, like 250K is enough to like wipe your debt clean from anything to like buy your house. Like you can literally make a huge step forward and like, you're just like kind of removed from like scarcity. And so even like a small sale like that, like it's almost just like they kind of like describe it as like a checkpoint. And then like, you know, cause like reality, like if I were to like go back and it's like, oh, what's business am I going to start? Like, oh, business in the lead gen industry. Probably not. Like there's a lot of like long-term flaws in that industry. Like I just like one of the reasons that I built the content company was like, I'm just looking at this and I'm just like, okay, so GDPR is like happening in Europe. And I saw this like 2 years ago. I was like, it's only a matter of time before it comes to America. Like Canada's already got a version of it. And then now California is introducing this Privacy Act, which is not a huge deal, but like, I'm just like, you know, this outbound is just going to die. Like it's going to die over the next 10 years or get like really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And so like, those are all the things where like, I think where you can look at an exit is like, there's times where I think it does make sense where like you can just checkpoint, get out and then like go build something fresh with all of like the new lessons you've learned and build something that is like long-term stable, which is like when I built the content company and like Content Allies, like I was just like thought through that meticulously to be like, what is a model that is going to still be relevant 20 years from now? Cause that's what I want is a company that's going to be awesome 20 years from now still.
Yep.
And like that's kind of the mindset I went to, and it's harder and it's slower to build, but I know it's like once I build it, I'm just gonna like be ecstatic for the rest of my life and be have this amazing asset kind of thing. So
yeah,
it's another kind of, I guess, kind of perspective on that as well.
No, for sure. I mean, I think the risk mitigation is a huge one. Yeah, I mean, if you have platform risk, which I think is what I would call, you know, the lead gen industry, or like industry risk, which I think we have with podcasting a little bit. Like podcasting is really popular right now and one day it might not be. And that's the risk we have, I think. But the, you know, the value we have is whatever, not going away as long as the basis behind it stays. But yeah, I think about that. It's like there is risk in every business, even, you know, blog content or whatever. It's not super high. But yeah, if you're in an industry with like platform risk or industry risk, getting out and taking those chips off the table is really reasonable. I agree. Yeah. Nice. Well, man, this is a lot of fun. I was thinking about when we sat down, I was like, this is like the best, right? It's like sitting down and talking with another, like, especially product or service business owner about just like how they run their business is like the best hour I can spend. So thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for having me on here. This was awesome. And hopefully got some good pieces of value. I know I got some stuff from you out of this, so I got to start recording sales calls. So that's
likewise.
That's my big takeaway.
Cool. So Jake, for folks who want to kind of catch up and learn more about you and what you're up to, where's the best place?
So the main thing, if they want to see any of my content, my podcast or blog, you can go to jake-jorgevin.com. That's my personal site. Just try to type my name somewhat into Google because I know it's a hard one to spell. And it'll probably get there. And then also leadcookie.com is a LinkedIn lead gen business as well. So, those are the two main, places to find me. So yeah.
Awesome. This is a lot of fun. Thanks, Jake.
All right. Thanks for having me on here, Craig.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.